With a Wookiee ahead and a Wookiee behind, the apprentice had plenty of time to get used to their smell, or so he would have thought. He was surprised the smell didn't trigger any flashbacks to his childhood on Kashyyyk, since the few memories he had recovered of his father's death suggested that they had lived there for some time. Finally, the access way widened, joining several others at a junction large enough for the three of them to stand. Their guide, whom the apprentice eventually gathered was some kind of laser technician when he wasn't welding armor plates to the superstructure, explained with gestures that not far away was an exhaust port that would take him where he wanted to go. The port led into another shaft that was very dangerous, a point conveyed by vigorous flashing hand signals and fingers drawn numerous times across the throat. He couldn't tell exactly what the threat was, but he assured them both that he would be careful. From there, it seemed he was supposed to keep going upward. "Thank you," he said, gripping each of their hands in turn and having his finger bones crushed. "You've helped everyone by helping me. I hope one day you'll know that." The big male patted him affectionately on the head. "What about you two? Will you be okay?" The Wookiees exchanged a world-weary glance. Shrugging, the smaller made it clear that he wasn't to worry about them. The big male grunted and pushed the apprentice bodily toward the correct access way. There was no point resisting. When he had gone 2 meters, he turned to look back. They were already gone. Then it was back to crawling. Ahead, growing steadily louder, the sound of stormtroopers talking suggested that they hadn't led him astray. The access way terminated as promised in an exhaust port, guarded by a full squadron of alert-looking troopers. 2 quad laser emplacements with human gunners watched over the port. 4 walkers clanked about in line of sight. He backtracked to the last junction and slithered into a ventilation duct leading upward, to a ledge on which the cannons were mounted. He sneaked his nose out the far end and used telekinesis to create a distraction below. While the guard's attention was elsewhere, he slithered out and ran to the first of the cannons. He killed the operator in mid-stride and kept on running to the second cannon. It had turned 90 degrees to face him by the time he was on it, throwing its operator bodily out of his harness and taking his place. The weapon swiveled smoothly on its mountings as he swung it to bear on the nearest of the walkers. A series of pounding shots penetrated its armor and blew it to smithereens. His next targets were the guards below, before they could get a bead on him. They scattered in all directions, looking for cover. While they were busy, he took out the second walker. Reinforcements flooded in from all directions. He strafed the guards again, then took out the third walker. Hearing TIE fighters on their way, he judged that confusion had reached its peak and slipped away from the cannon, leaving it rewired to rotate and fire at random. As he dropped down to the exhaust port and hurried inside, several converging waves of blaster fire blew the cannon to pieces, helping to cover his escape. Things were quieter in the downward-sloping shaft, at least for a while. Running into the warm air slowed his descent somewhat, and only the occasional hot blast caused any discomfort. He slowed, approaching the end of the exhaust port. A broad-bladed fan spun swiftly in his path. He stopped it telekinetically and slipped safely through to the other side, but not before triggering obstruction alarms and drawing technical and security personnel from far and wide. He fought his way through the ventilation control room, heading upward again as instructed, looking for the dangerous tube he had been told to expect. The machinery around him grew larger and more complicated as he progressed. Enormous interlocking tubes, fed by thick hydraulic hoses, steamed and throbbed in series. His vision of the Death Star was far from complete, but he had enough information now to begin piecing together exactly where he might be. When he passed a sign warning of the presence of Tibana gas, he was sure of it. Tibana gas was a rare and highly reactive compound found on some gas giants like Bespin. When combined with a stream of coherent light, it vastly increased the laser's output, leading to its use in several advanced ship designs and, it seemed, on the Death Star. Looking around him more closely, he could see that the machinery dwarfing him could be the components of a massive laser system, one in proportion with the station's enormous size. When he reached a laser tube wider across than some small cities, he knew he had found the place his Wookiee guide had been referring to. The system was being test-fired, with dozens of Imperial technicians and weapons experts observing its performance. He had to get past them all and avoid the beam of the laser itself in order to reach his goal. When he reached the top of the laser tube, he realized that his conception of the Death Star's weapon system hadn't been nearly grand enough. The laser he had been observing was just one of 8 tributary lasers that would merge into one shockingly destructive beam. Carefully timed pulses down each of the 8 channels would create a force capable of destroying any ship that he could think of, possibly even a planet. He felt ill at the thought. The apprentice gazed out across the enormous focusing dish, which he had initially assumed to have a relatively innocent purpose. Now that he knew what it was really for, the thought that he should destroy it filled him with a weary sort of urgency. He had interfered significantly already with several of the Emperor's grandiose plans. Why not this one too? The answer lay in his bones. He was daunted just thinking about it, not only by the task itself, but also by the deaths he had already caused. Could he bear such a black achievement on top of all the others? Could Juno? He wasn't sure of the answer. No, he decided. This was a job for other people, for the Rebel Alliance, if he could only find and free them from the Emperor's cold clutches. That was the important thing, that they should survive and fight another day. That was all he had to achieve, this mission. Coherent vermilion pulses came and went in arcane sequences as the weapon continued its test run. Each discharge consumed enough energy to power a Star Destroyer. A structure on the rim of the focusing crater caught his eye, an observation blister made of gleaming transparasteel in which a number of human figures were very faintly visible. One figure, clad entirely in black, appeared, bowed, and disappeared again. Master and servant. His jaw set, the apprentice wound his way across the rim of the superlaser's focusing dish, lit by blinding green.